I simply do not like AT1s and I do not like Cocos because, to be very honest, yeah, I always have seen the risk that you probably get wiped out completely, while on the equity side, you will get money back.
This decision by FINMA to wipe out these 16 billion francs worth of bonds really caused shockwaves through the market.
We know that the AT1 wipeout is going to cause ripple effects across the board.
16 billion Swiss francs worth of risky notes go to zero. What just happened there?
Well, for those of us in the bond market, we always knew AT1s were the fulcrum in the bank's capital structure. And we always wondered if there ever came an event which would cause those bail-inable bonds to be bailed in, how would they be bailed in? How would they be treated? Now we know. They were bailed in and then zeroed. They actually are below equity holders in the capital structure, which is not something I guess most investors would have assumed.
PIMCO is a big holder of them. Also, BlackRock and Invesco are known to be decent size holders of Credit Suisse AT1s.
PIMCO and Invesco were among the largest holders of the risky bonds that were wiped out by the UBS takeover.
What does that mean for a $275 billion market of these instruments that are owned by pension funds and other investors around the world?
Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In today's episode, I want to talk to you about additional Tier 1 bonds. Now, these bonds are probably something that you've never heard about before. However, the recent collapse of Swiss banking giant Credit Suisse has thrown these bonds into the spotlight, because as part of the deal whereby UBS has acquired all of the assets of Credit Suisse, the $17 billion worth of AT1 bonds that were in the capital structure were taken back into the bank and completely written down to zero. So the bondholders lost all of their money, whilst the shareholders of Credit Suisse actually received some payment for their shares. And the reason that this is causing concern in the financial markets is that bonds rank ahead of equity. So it's very, very unusual for bondholders to lose all of their money, but equity holders to actually get something back. So in today's video, we'll go through exactly what additional Tier 1 bonds are, why they were created, and why it was possible for the bondholders to be wiped out in full in the case of Credit Suisse. We'll have a look at the specifics of the Credit Suisse situation and look at which funds have lost the most money. We'll talk about the total size of the AT1 market and what the implications of this wipeout will be for both banks and the wider market. We'll then have a look at what the hedge fund's response to this wipeout has been, because as usual, the hedge funds have been sniffing around trying to make a quick buck from something like this. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of this situation are and what the impact is likely to be on the global economy.
Additional Tier 1 bonds. Let's talk a little bit about what they are and why they are getting so much attention. First of all, let's talk about what typically happens in a bankruptcy. To be clear, Credit Suisse is not a bankruptcy, but it is clearly a rescue. And according to the SEC and, you know, most econ textbooks and finance textbooks, first, the secured creditors, those who have collateral against their lending, they are the ones who are made whole first in the event of a bankruptcy, then unsecured creditors, and then stockholders. Those folks in the middle here, they're not all getting made whole in this UBS rescue of Credit Suisse. And that's because of these additional Tier 1 bonds. Effectively, what they are, they're a type of debt, a special type of debt that was cooked up after the European debt crisis to help increase capital at some of the European banks. It helps them bolster their capital to meet regulations that are designed to prevent failure. However, if there is a failure, if there is what's called a distressed event, sometimes they can be converted into equity, that is, into stock, or entirely written down. It is the latter that has now happened in the case of UBS's acquisition of Credit Suisse. As a condition of its acquisition, it did not want to have to take on those liabilities, those bonds, because it wouldn't have made financial sense in the eyes of UBS. But what this means is now more than $17 billion of these so-called AT1 bonds are being wiped out. The folks who hold them, mostly centered in Europe, now will not get anything back on that investment. And that is being seen by some as quite controversial, even though this type of investment is seen as quite risky when you buy the stuff in the first place.
So as you've just heard, the additional Tier 1 bonds were introduced after the global financial crisis in 2008 as a way of banks being able to raise more capital to support their balance sheet. At that time, a lot of the equity value, the share prices for banks, had been wiped out as part of those bailouts. And so the market was very cautious about putting any new equity into the banking world. So in order to make it easier for the banks to be able to raise capital to support their balance sheet, to give them some headroom in the event of future financial difficulties, these new instruments were introduced. And the reason that they were more attractive to the market is that they were bonds. They are basically debt. And the main benefits of bonds versus equity are, firstly, they pay a coupon, so you receive a regular payment on that bond. Secondly, they have a maturity date, so at some point in the future, you're due to be repaid on that bond. And thirdly, the bonds rank ahead of equity in the capital structure. So that means that in normal circumstances, if the bank is broken up, then you should receive your payment before any of the equity holders receive their payment. However, as with any financial instrument, the devil is in the detail. It all depends what the terms and conditions of each specific additional Tier 1 bond stipulate in terms of what can happen in the future, because the technical name of these bonds is contingent convertible bonds, and that's the CoCo that you've heard referred to a couple of times in this video already. The shortened version of contingent convertible is CoCo, because everybody likes a cool, snappy acronym. And contingent convertible basically means that the bank who has issued those bonds has the right to convert that bond into equity at some point in the future, dependent on some contingent event. And in the case of Credit Suisse, what the proposal is that those bonds will be converted to equity and that equity will be fully written off. So that means that the bonds were converted into something that was entirely worthless. So the recap here is that these bonds were created by banks after the global financial crisis as a way of raising more capital. And the market was happy to buy these bonds because they had very attractive coupons. So it looked like a much better option than actually investing equity into those banks. But unfortunately for all of the bondholders in the Credit Suisse situation, what they didn't do is really fully understand the risk that in the event of some form of failure of the bank, they were looking at being completely wiped out. And that's exactly what's happened. The action taken by Credit Suisse to write down 16 billion francs or $17 billion worth of AT1 bonds has shocked the financial markets for two reasons. Firstly, the markets were surprised that the bondholders have been completely wiped out, whilst the equity holders are receiving some payment. And secondly, the markets have been shocked by the size of this write down. Prior to the failure of Credit Suisse, the largest wipeout of 81 bondholders was in respect of the Spanish bank Banco Popular, which was sold to local rival Santander for the nominal price of $1 back in 2017. Banco Popular had $1.4 billion worth of 81 bonds in its capital structure, but the key difference with regards to that situation was that everybody was wiped out. So there were absolutely no issues with regards to ranking and recovery because nobody recovered anything. So the whole thing was a complete write-off. Now, with regards to the Credit Suisse situation, obviously the 81 bondholders have also been wiped out entirely. They've lost the full $17 billion. But the key difference here is that the equity holders have actually received some payment. They've received UBS shares in exchange for their Credit Suisse shares. And that really changes the whole landscape for 81 bonds. Because if you're now a fund and you're looking to make an investment into a bank, and you have the option of either investing into an 81 bond or investing directly into the equity. The learning point from the rescue of Credit Suisse is that if you're holding the equity, you might get something back, but if you're holding the 81 bonds, you're likely to be completely taken out. Now, the details of who is holding those Credit Suisse 81 bonds are not publicly available, but the largest single holders who've confirmed that they were holding bonds are PIMCO, who are holding $807 million worth of 81s, and Invesco, that were holding $370 million. Now, PIMCO stated that they've lost $340 million on the write-down of these bonds. However, it's likely that they lost the full $807 million, but they would have been marking those bonds to market over the last few years. So as the value of those bonds fell over the last few years, they would have been absorbing those losses on a yearly basis. It was also reported that BlackRock was holding $113 million of Credit Suisse 81 bonds at the end of February, and that funds managed by Lazard Freya and GAM Investments were also exposed. However, the potential largest holder of these bonds is the Qatar National Wealth Fund, which was reported to have invested $4.5 billion in 2013 into Credit Suisse's 81s. Now, although we don't have a definitive list of who was holding those bonds, it was likely to have been pension funds and other funds, so you potentially could have had some of your investment into those bonds if some of the funds you've given your money over to decided that it looked like an attractive, interesting investment. So how large is the AT1 bond market, and what are the implications of Credit Suisse writing off the full amount of these bonds for the wider financial environment? The vast majority of AT1 bonds relates to banks based in Europe, and the immediate ramifications of this write-off was that the bond prices fell dramatically in the markets as bondholders started to panic that their bonds could also be completely written down. However, as I mentioned earlier in the video, these bonds are bespoke. The terms and conditions of these bonds are completely different. So bondholders have been rapidly going through all of the paperwork, checking whether or not they are sitting with an exposure risk that could be completely written down, or if there are different circumstances.
It was brought to light that the Swiss law about a permanent write-down of these bonds was more of the exception rather than the norm. When the market realized this, it led to a lot of the European AT1s to rally off the lows. I've got a graphic here on the screen that points out that Barclays, BNP, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, Santander, the law around their AT1s loss absorption is not the same around this Swiss law. But still, this throws up some existential questions on the future of AT1s in general. Some investors might not hang around for answers and may leave the market for good.
So the position for each financial institution is completely different here. But the overall impact on the market is negative, and there is a major question mark now as to whether financial institutions will still be able to use AT1 bonds because of what's happened in the Credit Suisse situation. And the risk from the financial markets and banks' point of view is that when these bonds are due for maturity, when they would normally be rolled over and money would usually be raised from replacement bonds, the big question now is whether the fund managers will want to reinvest into these AT1s, or if they would be looking for different instruments or potentially complete change to the terms and conditions to make sure that these bonds couldn't be converted to equity and then completely written off. Now, whenever there's any financial turmoil and the value of financial instruments drops dramatically, hedge funds and vulture funds always appear looking to make a bargain basement purchase and potentially make a fortune from the future uplift in value. Now, you may be thinking that this can't be the situation for the Credit Suisse bonds because it's been declared that they are completely worthless. They've been written off entirely. However, as with any of these situations, there's always a potential for a legal challenge. Somebody to go through all of the documentation, find a loophole and say, actually, you can't write off all of this investment. You need to pay something back to these bondholders. And that possibility has led to a lot of interest from hedge funds in the Credit Suisse AT1s. Despite the fact that the intention is to write these bonds down to zero, they've been trading for around 3 cents on the dollar. And it's reported that several hundred million dollars worth of the AT1s have traded, mainly between large US investors. The buyers of these bonds are a mixture of hedge funds and deep distressed debt funds, and it's expected that these buyers will join forces and put together some form of legal action to litigate against UBS to force them to pay back something to the bondholders. Now, whether or not any of these hedge funds make any profit on these bonds remains to be seen. But this is how these guys have made a lot of money in the past, by buying things that look potentially worthless, entering into some sort of class action lawsuit, and trying to get the companies involved to pay them off. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because I think the situation relating to Credit Suisse's AT1 bonds is really interesting. Firstly, we've got a situation whereby bondholders have been wiped out, but equity holders have actually received some form of payment, and that is very unusual. In the normal course of events, debt holders that are secured receive payment first. Then we have unsecured debt holders, of which bondholders are part of that group. And then we have equity holders at the bottom. And the equity holders are usually seen as taking the highest risk because they have the highest potential upside, because if the equity price rises dramatically, they get all of that benefit. Whereas the debt holders only have a limited amount of return. Generally, whatever the coupon is on your bond, that's what you'll get paid, and you might get your money back at the end of the deal. So we've got a very unusual situation here whereby the bondholders have been taken out, but the equity holders have received some payment. and that's caused shockwaves all the way through the markets. Now, when you look at the terms and conditions of the Credit Suisse bond, that's exactly what they say. It says that this is a contingent convertible instrument that could be converted into equity and therefore could be written down to zero at some point in the future. But as with a lot of other financial institutions, the holders of these bonds weren't really looking at that as being a realistic outcome. They believed that in the event of something happening to Credit Suisse, that the bondholders would probably get paid out. So this has been a real surprise and has caused a lot of other bondholders to look at their portfolio and see exactly what they've invested into and whether or not they're at risk of being wiped out as well. Now, as it turns out, it looks like a lot of the other banks in the market don't have the same conditionality that Credit Suisse have. Credit Suisse have taken a more aggressive approach. However, one of the key things to bear in mind here is that this situation came as a result of the potential failure of Credit Suisse. It almost went bust. And the Swiss authorities stepped in rapidly and organised a takeover deal in the course of a weekend, whereby UBS have now taken on all of the assets and liabilities of the Swiss bank. And when you've got a situation like that, all bets are off because you're dealing with the central bank, the regulator, and the government of that country, and they can really do what they like. So the terms and conditions of the bond may say one thing, but if the country decides that it has to do a bailout and a takeover, it can really do whatever it likes. Now, obviously, the hedge funds have latched onto the fact that there are legal terms and conditions attaching to all of these bonds. And that's why the Credit 81 bonds do have some value today, because those guys believe that they can force some form of legal action to get some type of recovery. But that will take a long period of time. These court cases take many, many years to come to fruition. The hedge funds don't care. They will sit on that position and hopefully get a payout at some point down the road. But the vast majority of the market is not interested in that sort of recovery. And I think the immediate implications of what's happened at Credit Suisse will be negative for the financial markets. Firstly, it's unlikely that there will be a lot of demand for new issuance of AT1s anytime in the near future because of what's happened. Secondly, the existing AT1 market of $275 billion is now at risk because a lot of the holders of those bonds may not want to renew their investment when those bonds come up for maturity. So there is a big question mark for a lot of the banks as to how they're going to finance those bonds as and when they come up for repayment. And then thirdly, in terms of overall confidence, what's happened over the course of the last few weeks where we've seen three US banks failing and a major Swiss financial institution almost going bankrupt and having to be bailed out by its largest competitor? All of that has resulted in a major fall in confidence in terms of the financial markets and the banking sector in particular. And the write-off of these 81 bonds will further undermine that confidence. It's making fund managers take a step back and say, actually, we think something may happen in the banking sector. We're already seeing banks wobbling and coming under stress and pressure. And the fact that fund managers such as PIMCO, Invesco, and BlackRock are losing money on their banking investments is likely to lead to them wanting to reduce their exposure to the banking sector. That will make it more difficult for banks to be able to raise capital to meet their regulatory requirements, which puts further pressure on their balance sheets, and therefore that could result in a reduction in their loan books. That means that there will be less cash moving around in the economy, so it'll be more difficult to obtain loans, and all of this could therefore result in a slowdown in global spending and a slowdown in the global economy. So overall, what's happened in Switzerland relating to a Swiss bank could have major ramifications for the whole of the global economy, not just for Europe and not just for banking, but the whole global economy. So hopefully you found today's episode useful, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up. And thank you for watching this video all the way through to the end. And here's something to put a smile on your face.